You're listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network.
Hey there, Sports Pharmacy fans. It's your host, Dr. Rage, coming at you with another episode of the Sports Pharmacy Podcast. As a pharmacist, wellness expert, and certified sports nutritionist, I'm here to bring you the latest and greatest in the world of sports and wellness. Whether you're a diehard fan or an aspiring athlete, this is the place to be for all things health and performance related. So grab your favorite sports drink, kick back, and let's dive into some engaging discussion on how to optimize your well-being and athletic potential. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button, join our Discord, and let's get on this journey together. Let's go. Welcome, 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 sports pharmacy fans. What's going on? This is Dr. H with you. I have the pleasure of having a new friend of mine, Dr. Scott Zation, rheumatologist out of Dallas, Texas. How are you, sir?
Great. How are you?
Good, man. Good. I wanted to tell a story of how I stumbled upon Dr. Zation. We had a good conversation with Dr. Pamela Smith, and she gave me the names of a couple of people that are doing great work around low-dose naltrexone in the Dallas area. One of the names that came up was Dr. Zation, and the next day I received a prescription from his office. It was the most bizarre thing. I was like, all right, that's got to be a sign. I got to reach out to this man. Let's get him on the podcast. How are you?
Good. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir. Dr. Zation, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? I know we were chatting in the pregame. You're from New Jersey and went to school in New Hampshire, right?
That's right. I grew up in New Jersey and went to college and med school at Dartmouth in New Hampshire. Played a little soccer up there.
We didn't even talk about that.
I was on the team. I didn't get much playing time because I would leave practice early to go study.
Oh, goodness.
But that's how I think I got into the college in the first place. And I was always interested in becoming a doctor ever since I was 16. I worked in hospitals as a volunteer locally in my hometown and did some volunteer work at Sloan Kettering Hospital in New York and was fortunate to be accepted into medical school. I became very interested in rheumatology, which is my specialty, because at the time, there really wasn't a lot known about rheumatology. Science was just starting, and we didn't know the answers. I did have one interesting anecdote, if I could share it. When I was a freshman, there was a class that I was very interested in taking, but it was taught by a graduate student. And I was told when I went to Dartmouth that I'd only be taught by full professors. So I remember one cold winter day, I went down and met the graduate student. And he convinced me to take his class. And it was a biology class. And it was probably one of the best classes I took at Dartmouth. So after the class ended, I asked him if I could work in his laboratory. He was very kind. He said yes. And I was chopping up these rat spleens. I really didn't know what I was doing, but I was helping them with their studies. And lo and behold, I found out later what I was doing was purifying a protein called interleukin-2,
which was
one of the first, what was called cytokines. And cytokines are proteins that are messengers between cells. And since that time, there have been a whole bunch of cytokines that have been discovered. Anyway, this graduate student got his PhD, and he went off and went into industry and actually, it's an entrepreneur like yourself, Dr. H. He started his own company. And the first product that he brought to market was, you may not have heard of the medication, but it was a drug called Enbrel.
Of course I've heard that medication. I have patients that have been on it, man. Come on. So that was one of the first ones you brought to market?
Yeah, that was his first product. It was called Immunex, and they eventually sold out to Amgen.
Wow.
And as many may know, Enbrel was one of the first TNF blockers, which changed the treatment for rheumatoid arthritis. It just changed their lives. And since that time, many other ones have come down the pike. So that's a little bit about me.
That's amazing, man. It's cool to see the direction that medicine has gone through the years. And being able to work with somebody like that, I'm sure I have a very similar story. When I first started undergrad in North Carolina, my first job was at the school was in an inorganic lab where I was using a lot of more inorganic compounds. And that's what really motivated me to get into compounding, but I'm more on the pharmacy level. When I went to pharmacy school, I thought for sure I was going to go into research. That's what I wanted. That was my passion. I liked working in a lab. It was quiet. I got to put my own headphones in. Nobody bothered me. It wasn't until I got through, I think, my second or third year, and I was like, man, I really feel the importance of patient care and being the front of pharmacy and being able to meet different people and to grow from there. And like I mentioned, I did start my career in the neonatal ICU in Roanoke, Virginia, Carilion Hospital, and decided that that was very tough for me to do, dealing with these small babies. And I was like, all right, I'm going to go to CVS, make my money, and then purchase the pharmacy. Now we're here. So I know for you, Dr. Zashin, your clinic is down in Dallas. And one of the cool things that I saw in one of your videos was that, and this is my dream, by the way, I can't wait for my pharmacy to be this way, is that you don't take insurance. Like, you're disconnected from those guys completely.
Now, what happened was, probably, I've been in practice 34 years. Probably after my 10th year, I was very busy. And basically the way it worked is a patient would come to see you. They'd have whatever insurance, Aetna, Blue Cross, Cigna. And at the time, there was a lot of what we call pre-existing. So if someone had been diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis in the past and they changed insurance companies, they came to see you, they basically would not get any benefits. So what you would have to do is each patient you saw, you'd have to pre-authorize them before you saw them for every patient. And then even if you pre-authorize them to see you, if the insurance company investigated and found out, lo and behold, this patient already had a diagnosis of rheumatoid arthritis, you would spend your time taking care of the patient, ordering the test, but the insurance company would not reimburse you for your time or cost. And then they would arbitrarily say, Dr. Zashin, in 3 months, we're going to have to cut your reimbursement 40%. And so at the time, the way I envisioned my practice is I wanted to take care of patients in the best way possible. I have always had registered nurses in my office taking care of my patients. Most of the time, and this is not to denigrate medical assistants, there are some great medical assistants, but I always felt more comfortable with my registered nurses giving my patients injections and just helping out. So I've always wanted to keep a high level of service for my patients. And unfortunately, with the reimbursement provided, I was not able to do that. And I like to spend time with patients. So I gradually got off all of the insurance networks. And it's been like that for over 20 years that I've done that. And unfortunately, enough patients find that they get benefit with seeing me, and are willing to pay a little extra for having that access to my practice. And I've enjoyed it a lot more. I see fewer patients, but I'm able to spend more time on their particular problem. I often get referred patients who have seen two or three other rheumatologists and they're not getting better, or they don't know what the problem is. And I can't promise them that I'll figure it out, but I do my best to try to leave no stone unturned to sort out what's causing their problem and treat them in the safest, most effective manner.
And I'm sure you've seen the other side for patients, how it goes for them. And like I said, I can only speak to the family member that I know that has rheumatoid arthritis and how difficult it is for her whenever she has a provider that she has to go to. And every year she has to get new insurance, right? She's unemployed and she's not quite at the age to get Medicare. So she's having to buy insurance through the marketplace. And for her, I feel like every January it's the same conversation, is I have to find somebody that is in her network, is a preferred provider as well, and what places, even for pharmacies that are in network for her. And most of the time for independents like us, 90% of the plans out there, independent pharmacies are not going to be preferred networks, preferred pharmacies. They'd much rather them go to the big boxes. Another example, my wife, she used to work for a large insurance company, and they have a tight relationship with Caremark. And I own the pharmacy. My wife and I couldn't fill my prescriptions at my pharmacy because our insurance wasn't accepted at my own pharmacy, which to me, it's a little unfair. So our model at Stonebriar is that we're less than 5% insurance reimbursements now when it comes to our profit line. So I have been focused on shifting everything to compounding and our other programs that we have within our pharmacy. So I'm about 95% what we call cash patients. And I feel like I can't speak obviously for the medical side, sir, but for us in pharmacy, that's what the future looks like. It's not just about filling prescriptions anymore, because I lose money on 90 to 95% of prescriptions that are filled through insurance at my pharmacy, 90 to 95%. I did a profit loss statement for January and February so far. And I'll tell you straight up, man, I profited just from medication inventory, not with payroll, nothing. Just for medications, I profited less than $3,000 in 2 months. You can't pay for anything with that. I can't afford a pharmacy. We wouldn't even cover my rent for a month.
Yeah.
And that's the struggle.
If you want to try to provide the highest level of care to patients and basically it's not just the doctor. You need that whole support staff because with a lot of medicines we use, these medications have to get prior authorization. That takes a lot of time. There's a lot of red tape, and we're willing to go the distance to do whatever we can to get the patient the right medication, not the one that's necessarily the approved medication. And that may require peer to get the insurance companies to cover it. So what we both try to do is to give the patients the best experience possible. And the way the system is going, especially with the, if you're not with a big company and you have to go on the, I guess it's called the Obamacare type thing. First of all, you probably won't see a doctor. If you do see a doctor, it could be many hours away from where you live. You're not going to get the attention you need. So there's good and bad, and everybody has to do what's best. Each patient has to decide what's best for them. When we think about insurance in the real world, insurance covers catastrophic things. So if you need to be in the hospital, you need insurance. Or you have expensive surgeries, but the day-to-day things, people do expect insurance to cover it, but is that realistic? And so, again, each person, each family has to decide what's best for them, what's their priorities. What I've enjoyed doing is getting to know my patients, and they're pretty much family.
That's awesome. I love to hear that, man. That to me gives me hope for the future. And I think patient care is so important, but Dr. Zasha, we've completely gone off track. We were going to talk about low-dose naltrexone and rheumatology, and of course, we spend the first 12 minutes talking about insurance. So let's turn things around, man. So let's talk about rheumatology. I am a pharmacist. I know the medication side. I don't know much about the other side, the medicine side. So let's talk about managing chronic rheumatology patients. So tell me a little bit about how this field differs a little bit from just other fields of medicine. And I know a lot of it has to do with managing chronic pain. So let's talk about that for a little bit.
Sure. So everybody, rheumatology, this gives you a little bit of a window into any type of health. You treat chronic medical conditions, such as rheumatoid arthritis, acute medical conditions, such as gout. And there's a lot of psychosocial aspects in people who deal with chronic pain and fatigue, which is a big part of what we see. So basically, when a patient comes to see you, the first goal is to find out what's giving them their most problem. The way I used to like to phrase is, if I had a magic wand, what would be the two or three things you're most concerned about or you'd like me to help you with? And many times it's pain and fatigue. And so what's causing that? Is it rheumatoid arthritis? Is it fibromyalgia? Is it just depression? And sometimes, or sleep issues. So we try to sort out the major symptoms and then try to come up with a diagnosis as best as possible. As opposed to other specialties, sometimes there's not a clear-cut answer. We may not know exactly what the diagnosis is initially, and it may take a year or two to figure it out, or you may never know, but at that point, you're treating the patient in terms of trying to improve their quality of life. And that's where I differ from my colleagues. I was always open to alternative treatments. I always try to think outside the box. I remember probably about 10 years ago, I wrote a book on natural treatments for osteoarthritis. I used to do acupuncture in my office for patients. So I was always listening to patients because usually through the patients, I find things that will work. And that either supplements or even low-dose naltrexone first came to me from a patient. So you always have to listen to your patients and see what's helping them and then try to determine if it's something that might help others.
So you brought it up and I have to talk about it because it's one of my favorite medications. Low-dose naltrexone has been just a growing interest, especially in the autoimmune conditions. And I have had patients that have had their lives completely changed just from a 1.5 milligram capsule that they take every single day. So I'm very passionate about the project, about the medication. So can you share with us a little bit about some of the potential benefits that you're seeing in your patients and what the mechanism of action that's happening towards low-dose naltrexone in the body?
Sure. Low-dose naltrexone is an amazing medicine, amazing medication. My biggest surprise is why more doctors don't embrace it. I like to say that there have been three dramatic breakthroughs in medicine from the rheumatologic field. The first occurred before I was born, which is steroids. They were discovered at the Mayo Clinic. They were a miracle drug. They still are. We've learned over the years they do have potential side effects, so the least amount, the better. But they can dramatically change patients' lives and change it quickly. The second rheumatologic breakthrough I mentioned earlier in the podcast was the development of TNF blockers, Enbrel. They definitely have changed the lives of patients with rheumatoid arthritis. We really didn't have that many options until these biologics came along. The third dramatic breakthrough in my clinical experience is low-dose naltrexone. So I put their low-dose naltrexone up there with prednisone, steroids, TNF blockers, and low-dose. And it's such a inexpensive medication.
Right.
Safe medication and effective medication. And why it doesn't get universal recognition is because, again, the doctors these days are so busy, they don't have time to think out of the box. And why we prescribe so many medicines that are FDA-approved medicines, but off-label, but won't prescribe this one, it just baffles me. Mm-hmm. That being said, I agree with you. It's changed so many of my patients' lives for the better. Now, like anything, it doesn't help everybody.
Of course.
And anytime I prescribe a medicine, you always weigh the benefits of the medicine versus potential side effects. So what are the potential side effects of low-dose naltrexone? Cost is not an issue. It may vary from 60 cents to a dollar per pill. And what are the potential side effects? And this is what I tell my patients. I usually have them take it in the evening after dinner. Why is that? There's really no good reason for that, but that's the way it's been done over 30 plus years as this medication has been used to treat inflammation and pain. Just to remind everybody, naltrexone is the same medication that many people have heard of called Narcan. And Narcan is an FDA-approved medication at high doses to treat people who overdose on opioids or may have a chronic problem with alcohol. I prescribe it in a very low dose, a 10th to 100th of the FDA-approved dose. Again, it has to be compounded. There's no drug company that makes it. We give it after dinner, but a number of patients will get vivid dreams with it, mm-hmm. which is not a problem. Some patients don't mind it, but if it does interfere with sleep, then I tell them just take it in the morning. I've had a couple patients get irritable or agitated on it. If that happens, stop it. I gave it to my wife. She's got some chronic musculoskeletal pain. It bothered her stomach. I tell patients everything bothers my wife's stomach. So it's not a common side effect. But if that happens,
it's not classic wives.
What I do is I just change the filler. And you want to make sure that if you're getting it from a pharmacy, you want to make sure they use a short acting filler. So that's important to question your pharmacist about that.
Good question.
Not getting it from Stonebriar Pharmacy. Make sure it's a short-acting filler.
Hey, shout out Stonebriar Pharmacy, right?
That's right. What are the other potential side effects? How does it work? It's an opioid antagonist. So basically, if you're on low-dose naltrexone and you need narcotics, then the narcotic may not give you as much pain relief as you would like. So I recommend that my patients stop at least 72 hours before surgery if they know they're having surgery, so it's out of their system. But it's a very short-acting drug, so it's pretty much out of your system within 24 hours. Some patients will have some medical ID, so if they end up in the emergency room, the doctors know that they're on this medication, and if they're not responding to the pain medication, they can see why. We do monitor blood work on it. uncommonly, it can affect theoretically liver test or kidney function. So that's something we check. And if you're on thyroid medication, there is some reports that you may not need as much of your thyroid medicine. So I do keep an eye on that. Other than that, those are the major things. If you're on narcotics, you need to be tapered off and you need the pain medicine out of your system before we start it, because we don't want you going to withdrawal.
So can I ask you a question about that?
Yeah.
Sorry to cut you off. What about patients that are taking the Butrans, the oral Butrans, buprenorphine? Do you see patients having to stop that as well before they start naltrexone? Because there is a medication.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. I would probably talk with their prescribing physician that may be able to stay on that, but I don't know the answer. I haven't had anybody see me on that.
This just has to be a disclaimer that we have to share. Anything we talk about today, make sure you speak with your provider and your pharmacist to make sure the medication is safe for you. This is all informative. We're all just trying to teach people about new medications. So anything that we talk about here, please make sure you review with your doctor and pharmacist. On the pharmacy side, man, why is it so important to taper a patient starting, for example, some patients start either half a milligram or 1.5 milligrams? Why is that important? Is it to prevent side effects or just to see what dose they need to be at?
Initially, I did it to prevent side effects. The target dose has been traditionally 4.5 milligrams. But what I found in practice is that everybody's a little different. Each person has their own sweet spot. So they may do great at 1.5 or 2 milligrams. They go to 4.5, they don't do as well. So I do it for two reasons. One, to see if I can capture what that specific dose is that works best for them. And also, if you give them too much initially, they could have some side effects. So I basically titrate up for two reasons.
Do you have a favorite dose that you like to start about? Do you start them at 1.5?
I typically start at 0.5.
Okay.
If they tell me they're very sensitive to medicine, I might do 0.25. If they had tapered off narcotics and we want to try to get a quick response, those patients, I might do 1.5 milligrams. But I've backed away from that since I've realized that some people don't do better at lower doses.
Let's say we have a patient that wants to start low-dose naltrexone, and they're a little bit reluctant to bring this up to their provider. What advice would you give that patient, other than obviously to see you? That would be my number one option. But what advice would you give a patient to basically advocate for themselves on this medication?
Yes, doctors will probably be reluctant to prescribe it because they don't know anything about it. And you might bring in something that gives them some information on it. For example, I've published a few articles, peer-reviewed articles, using it for conditions such as Sjogren's syndrome, which is an autoimmune condition associated with dry eyes, dry mouth, achiness, fatigue, brain fog. Those patients, many of them will exquisitely respond to this medication. So bring something from a scientific article that might say, okay, look, it's in the medical literature, something I'm willing to try. So that's probably the best way to do it. And then let them know, say, yeah, I know there could be potential side effects. I'm willing to accept those potential risks with the medication. And let them know where they can get it filled too.
Like you mentioned before, it's always weighing the benefit versus harm to the patient or side effects to the patients. All great points. I know at the LDN Research Trust, they have a bunch of books now. I think there's three volumes now on LDN and ways to broach that subject. For example, I bought a bunch of copies at Stonebriar and I actually gave it out to some doctors that I think would benefit well for them, being hormonal doctors. And I know this is in your field, but have you heard anything about using it for anxiety and depression?
Yes, there is some anecdotal evidence that helps with anxiety and depression. What it does is it just helps people. They just feel better. They can't explain it when they come in, but they tell me, I just feel better. I don't feel ill. Mm-hmm. And what if I could briefly explain a little bit of the mechanism?
Please.
So basically what it does is using a very low dose. Again, the standard dose is 50 to 100 milligrams of naltrexone. And again, we're using 0.5 milligrams to start out. Again, that's a hundredth of the standard dose. And it blocks the body's opioid receptors for about 6 hours. And what happens is the body reacts to that by increasing production of what we call endogenous endorphins. And these endorphins are the body's natural opioids. Basically, the body naturally makes pain what we call pain medication, and these are the endorphins. So the endorphins not only help with pain, they can help with inflammation, and they also help people just feel better.
And I know we talk a lot about endorphins and how important it is to basically help your body self-heal is the best way I can help explain it. And specifically in rheumatoid patients, especially when they have like their immune system basically attacking itself, causing inflammation, we're helping to reverse that with low-dose naltrexone. Is that kind of an easy way to explain it?
Can you repeat the question for me?
Yeah. So when a patient is a rheumatoid patient, their immune system is basically causing the inflammation in their joints. Is that a simple assessment?
Yes.
And when we're giving low-dose naltrexone, boosting those endorphins is going to help reduce the inflammation because you're just helping your body heal itself.
In a sense, yes. Specifically, though, I'll tell you, people talk about using LDN for rheumatoid arthritis. In my experience, it has not been that helpful for inflammatory arthritis. So I wouldn't, if someone had moderate or severe rheumatoid arthritis, I would not use low-dose naltrexone as a primary treatment. We have so many sophisticated advanced medications that not only help people feel better, but they also help slow down and prevent damage. There's no data that low-dose naltrexone slows down or prevents damage. And I have tried it in a few people who didn't want to go on the disease-modifying drugs, and with moderate severe, it was not helpful. As an adjunct measure, many people with rheumatoid get secondary fibromyalgia, where their arthritis is under good control, but they have a lot of pain and fatigue, soft tissue pain. In those cases, adding the naltrexone may be useful, or in combination, but not, I wouldn't recommend it typically as a single agent for RA.
What is your opinion on the Janus kinase inhibitors, the JAK inhibitors?
So the JAK inhibitors are a pill, very effective medications to treat inflammatory arthritis and other conditions. They work quite quickly. You also may see benefit within 2 to 4 weeks. They do have a higher risk of shingles. So you probably want to be vaccinated for that before you start it. Compared to the TNF blockers, again, it will bring into the Enbrel, which is a TNF blocker. They may have a higher risk of malignancies or cardiovascular risks or infections compared to TNF blockers. There's two JAK inhibitors, one Xeljanz and one is Rinvoq. It was the study looking at Xeljanz compared to the TNFs that the FDA put a label or a warning on the JAK inhibitors. So you want to be cautious in somebody elderly if you're starting them on it compared to a younger patient, or at least more cautious. But they are a very effective treatment for RA and other conditions.
It's interesting that you bring up the point about shingles, because the family member that I was speaking about, she started Rinvoq. And I think probably like a month or two after starting it, she got shingles really bad, like on her side. Luckily, we were able to treat it and everything, and she's good now. But yeah, if you're not vaccinated for shingles, I'd be very wary about starting the medication. That's one of the big talking points that we always bring up to patients that are first starting even Rinvoq.
Yes.
Dr. Scott Zashin, man, all my questions I ran through. Is there anything else you'd want to bring up, man? Anywhere that people can find you? I saw your website. It looks amazing. I love the content that you put on there. But anything else you want to talk about?
No, I think, you know, that I appreciate being able to talk about naltrexone. And I think it can help so many people, and it's so underused. Again, think about it. If you see a rheumatologist and you're not feeling better, or you don't know your diagnosis, it's always worthwhile to get a second or third opinion. I'm happy to see patients seeking second or third opinions. A lot of my patients come to see me for that reason. And you're dealing with a chronic illness, and whatever you can do to try to improve the quality of your life, don't feel that you have to live with that. If not me, see somebody else, but seek a fresh approach and try to see a doctor open to things that are what we call out of the box a little bit.
Absolutely. ScottZashinMD.com. I'm looking over some of your books that you have on here, man, some of the articles. My favorite's always the patient reviews. I always like to see what patients say about doctors, man. And everything is just glowing about you, man. It's an absolute honor to have you on our podcast. Anything in the future that you ever want to discuss, man, you have my cell phone number. I appreciate your time today, sir.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. And good luck with your podcast and your pharmacy.
Appreciate that, man. Appreciate it. All right, man. Have a good one.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed the podcast, consider giving us a 5-star review anywhere that you get your episodes. Follow us at Sports Pharmacy Pod, as well as me, your host, at Dr. Mixalot. Join our Discord server for more interactions with me and fellow listeners. As always, stay well, stay hydrated, and I will catch you next time.